Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. It's beautiful. It's the middle of summer up here in my part of the world in Canada. I hope it's as beautiful for you everywhere. I love this weather, and it makes it hard to want to stay focused on work. So I find that you kind of want to just get to it and get the work done and then go outside and enjoy yourself, which is what we should do. So we've got a great show for you today. And so why don't we just do the same thing and just jump right into it? All right. My guest today has the unique ability of being able to stay super focused on the end goal. And in the past few years, this has enabled her to build a really, really impressive business. She started her career as a virtual assistant at a Facebook ad agency, and she fell in love with this process of customer acquisition via social media. Today, she is the founder and CEO of Emily Hirsch, Inc. It's an ad agency that is growing at an incredible rate. In this conversation, we discussed the three steps to killing it with Facebook ads, why marketing is just data, and how to find your first client, even with no money. Now, let's hack Emily Hirsch. When it comes to marketing your business, it's all about reaching the right audience at the right time. And it's about connecting with them when your message will resonate the most. So if you want to target your customers where they are every day and when they are ready to make a decision, LinkedIn can help you. When you advertise on LinkedIn, it's the world's largest professional network, in case you didn't know. You have the opportunity to build long-term relationships with your customers. Relationships that often translate into high-quality leads, website traffic, and higher brand awareness. So what's the first step? It's talking to the right audience. Well, every day, over 500 million professionals engage with content on LinkedIn, and chances are your future customers are among them. And the best part is, you can start for free today. To redeem a free $100 LinkedIn ad credit, go to linkedin.com/hack. That's linkedin.com/hack for your free $100 ad credit. Yes, some terms and conditions apply, but there's $100 in advertising money waiting for you at linkedin.com/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very special guest, Emily. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely my pleasure, Emily. I'm glad we found time to do this and I'm looking forward to it. So what do you say? Should we just jump into it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. All right, Emily, you do many different things. Today we are talking to Emily the Entrepreneur, which I think is the overarching idea of you. But as an entrepreneur, Emily, can you tell me, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Yeah, I think that the biggest thing is I'm able to stay super focused on an end goal and not get distracted with other ideas, and whether they be small or big projects. And I think over time, I've observed not only myself, but a lot of other successful entrepreneurs, and that's a super common theme. I think the more focus you can put into one business, like one avatar that you're going after, and all of your effort and energy and time into that, then you're able to create something really big.
I like it. How do you, like, I'm assuming the way that you do this is the fact that you are 100% confident in the project you've decided to focus on.
Yeah. I mean, definitely when I started, like I had other things, but then it always evolved into what I'm doing now. So I actually started this business as just a virtual assistant. And then like just, you know, $18 an hour was my introduction to the online world. And then from there, I started doing Facebook ads for those clients. And then that became my one thing. And then I grew a team, like, cause I couldn't keep on doing it myself. So it was definitely like a progression. It wasn't me 3 years ago saying, oh, I'm going to start a Facebook ad agency. But I think following what I think I have an ability to see what's working and what's like bringing money, what I'm good at doing, what I enjoy, and what's like got potential, and then putting the focus into not only like focusing on that, but continuing to improve that and grow it bigger.
So I like this. So starting as a VA and then realizing that you're one thing, like you, that your most valuable, I guess, job that you were performing for your clients was Facebook ad management.
Yes. Yeah. So I started as a VA. I started doing Facebook ad, and definitely it was like my most valuable. So obviously like with that, you can directly measure like results that you're getting and, you know, cost per lead. Like it's really easy to see if you're good at it or not. But also for me, like it was something that I really enjoyed. And I think that's super important because when you put that passion into it and that energy into it, like it's more than just exactly like, oh, I'm good at this, but I hate it. And then you're not going to be able to get a good result with that. So I was good at it, but I also loved it. I was really intrigued by it on my own time. I wanted to learn more about it and test myself and just push myself to learn more. So I think that was a big factor too, was that I really enjoyed it and I wanted to improve. And I could also see that like the potential behind it because of the results on such a small scale at that time that I was able to get for people, that I was like, wow, if I really got big and good with this, then it, you know, it has the potential to do amazing things, which is ultimately what I have created.
Right. Exactly. And so I know a lot of people like were probably in your position, maybe not a VA, but working for another company and realizing that something that they do is super valuable for that company or for their clients. Mm-hmm. But how making that decision to, I'm going to go out on my own and do it is one thing, but how do you get your first clients?
Yeah, I mean, well, I've always been an entrepreneur, so I never worked for anybody else. So it was just like, for me, that was just what I couldn't work for somebody else. But so what I tell people like on that, on how to get your first clients is use your network, like use your existing network. So if you're in a company and you know, you're doing something, like, do you have friends or family or somebody like in your town, you know, who could use your help doing that thing? And do it for super cheap or free the first time to get that experience and that testimonial, because the hardest thing is getting that first client, that first piece of business. And then from there, you can continue to use the testimonials. And like, that's how I have grown my business is, you know, when I was a virtual assistant, I was doing Facebook ads for clients for $25 an hour, my rate, you know, which is ridiculous. Like you can't get someone to do that, but I didn't have the experience on my own to back my work. And so I had to start there very humbly and build up and continue. Our retainer is like $3,000 a month for Facebook ads. And I have an entire team, but I didn't just start there on day one. And you have to prove yourself, especially if you're starting your business on your own.
Right. So if you offer a really good deal, it would be part of the deal would also be, if you're happy with this, I'm going to need a testimonial from you.
Yeah. Testimonial. And then you can also, I think that builds confidence in yourself too. Like yeah. Once you go and you're able to do it for somebody, then you're like, okay, I can go and offer this to somebody else and say, here's what I just did for so-and-so business.
Right. So what was the, from that point of getting your first client, what was the say first people on your team that you needed?
So for me, I hired, well, I really, this was a, building a team has been a huge learning experience for me, as I'm sure it is for most, but I just hired a virtual assistant first. Basically, I tried to get help doing what I was doing, like create more me's in the company. And when I was first starting to build my team, I thought I was offering like a very wide variety of services as a virtual assistant at that point and also doing some Facebook ads. So I thought, oh, I need to hire someone who can like do more virtual assistant work and offer more of that service to my clients. So that's where I started. But ultimately, my biggest hire and like what I hire the most of is in my company is ads managers to work under me to be able to serve our clients. So I think the first hire for a lot of people is either just like an assistant to take off the tasks that you don't have time to do, or trying to create another you in the company with what you're spending your time doing.
I love this idea of hiring a VA first to create more me's in the company.
Yeah.
I mean, that is ultimately what we do, but to hear it like that is excellent. I love that.
Yeah.
So this struggle, though, with growing a team, because you're right, this is something that most people, I would say, in your position struggle with, and it's just a constant learning curve, especially as the team grows. What's sort of the biggest hurdle in hiring ads managers?
Yeah. So for me, it's... for that position specifically, like we have about only 50% of people make it in the first month on the team, like because it is such a unique position where you have a lot of attention to detail needed. It's also not a super just tactical do what I say and then cross it off the list position. You have to come to the table with an understanding of strategy and an ability to take initiative and own your accounts. And ultimately, like, I don't know if somebody's going to be great until they actually start and I see their work. I'm also in the obviously like digital marketing space, which is very unique. So I've had people who have like 10 years of agency experience, marketing agency, which is more than I do, right? And come in to work for me and I have to let them go because they just don't understand this world and it just doesn't click for them. But I don't know that until I really see them. So I've put a lot of measures in place to try and help that. So we have like two rounds of interviews and a test that they go through all before they even talk to me for the final interview, which has helped a lot. But then, and then we have a very extensive training program that basically is like 90 days before they get any communication with my clients and they have to pass, you know, levels. So it's really intense, but that has helped me kind of weed people out. But I still have about 50% of people make it the first month, which obviously like cost me money to train somebody for no reason for a couple of weeks. And it's hard to have that constant turnover because for me, like I'm very high in demand. And so my biggest problem, which is a good one to have, but also frustrating, is being constantly understaffed and having to like turn down business sometimes because we don't have the staff for it. So recently I just hired like 4 ads managers and we had 5. So it was a big, I'm going to overstaff myself because I know, you know, 1 or 2 are not going to work out. And that way I'm in a better position in a month from now because it takes time. And when you hire good people, most of them are in a job and they have to give 2 weeks notice. And so it's like, it's a whole process. And so that's been the biggest struggle is just the turnover and like all the components of the position and knowing if someone is good before hiring them, because I don't know until they go and actually do the work and I can see it. And I have found that the people who actually don't have, like they have some experience, but that are super eager to learn and they don't have 10 years of experience. They maybe have like a year doing social media. Are some of my best people because I get to set the foundation for them. And they're also very grateful and loyal and eager to be a part of the team versus someone who comes in and I have to like unlearn what they think they know from an agency. And they're like, oh, I'm like too good for the training. And like, I already know this. And I mean, we just had to let someone go on like day 4 that they were in the company because that was the way it was like, the questions were half answered on the workbook that we give them. And it's just like, when you come in with that, it just makes it a lot harder for me to teach them. But when I can be the foundation, that's some of my best employees right now.
Interesting. I was going to ask you that, like, because you mentioned one of the very first things you mentioned about hiring was that initiative in people. And initiative isn't something really that just comes from experience behind a computer.
Right.
Usually sort of innate within a person that they just have that drive.
Totally.
And then also the people with 10 years experience just working for the same old company might be a little over confident in their actual abilities.
Right.
So with something, I mean, you mentioned also, I mean, you're in digital marketing. It's constantly changing, not even just evolving sometimes, like completely just transformational changes, even within Facebook itself, the way it works, the rules, what's working, what's not. You as the founder of this and with a fairly sizable team growing rapidly, do you feel like you need to stay on top of this, or have you sort of made that sort of part of the company culture is sharing knowledge amongst the team?
So both. Absolutely. I feel like I need to, and that's like a part of right now my role in the company is to be that. So I'm in a couple of masterminds where I learn a lot of what's working and surround myself with people that are trying new things, and I can see those trends in marketing. I also dedicate like literally on my calendar for 2 hours every Friday is like learning enrichment because I have so much that I have to go through. And that's not always just like Facebook ads. It's also just team growth training or whatever it is. But like I literally dedicate time that I go through different material every week and it's blocked on my calendar. And then I also definitely lean on the team to collaborate. So we have a monthly call with the ads managers. We call it the ads manager throwdown. And they all come to that call with what's working well, like something new they tried, or if they need help on something. And it's just like a huge, like I don't really talk in that call. It's just like a huge collaboration of the team because that allows them to bring those ideas. But I also like the culture of my company. And I tell people this from day one is like, once you nail our processes and what I want you to nail in the training, and I see that, if you have a new idea from a small like Facebook thing to test a different placement or a big marketing idea, like test it. I don't know everything. Absolutely not. And like, they see more in the day to day now than I do. So I encourage that in the culture and like, not only encourage it, but ask them like, please bring me those suggestions. And I can say like, no, they're not good or they're good, but bring those, because that's what marketing is about, is like, we don't know if it's going to work until we have data to say it does or it doesn't. There's definitely like general strategies that we like run by, but we try a new thing. And if it works, it, you know, that's everything. So it's in the company culture. And then the final thing I do is I release a Hirsch marketing report to the public. And that is where I will go into like what's working, what's not working. And then also like updates from Facebook. And that also forces me, because I release that to my following, that forces me to like spend, you know, 3 or 4 hours at the end of the month producing that and doing that research and like literally looking on Facebook, the updates that they released, and staying on top of that. So that's helped a lot too. This is month 3 of us having that, and it's been great. And we have 55 active clients in the space. So we see a lot of behind the scenes and a lot of data. And so I try my best to like consolidate all of that data and then have it benefit every client on our roster from the fact that like we all have that knowledge and we work together collaboratively.
Yes. And I love this, the idea of the way you have these throwdowns to bring all that information, but then also this Hirsch marketing report, right? It's a fascinating thing. You said it's been going on for 3 months. Talking about that, you could tell us, if you could tell us, let's take it as like a loose term, as a project within the company that you wanted to execute on. Could you tell us sort of the process that you, as the CEO in front of this, and also your team involved in this, like it seems, what's the process that you guys all go through to decide that something like the marketing report is worth the time, energy, and resources?
Well, so that would be like an internal project, but I think for our clients, like there's two answers here. So we can, one, like any new strategy for our clients, I guess the process is, so there's me as the CEO, and then I also have senior digital strategists who are like actually the managers of my ads manager. So they report to them. So mostly if the ads manager had a new strategy, they would either bring it to that person, their manager, and say like, here's what I'm thinking of trying. You think it's okay if I run this by the client? And most of the time we would say yeah, because they are trained enough that they know what's working and what's not working. Or we also have a daily team huddle. So there's times where I'm on that and they'll say like, hey, I want to try this. Like, is that okay? And it's an idea. So they'll first like get the approval. Then we take it to the client. And most of the time the clients are like, yeah, great. You guys are the experts. Let's try it. And then from there, it's just about the data. It's like, I always say that like marketing is just data. Like we need to remove the emotional connection to like, people will like that or they won't like this. And obviously, to an extent, we know our audience and we know what they like. And oftentimes we are our audience when we're marketing, but the data talks the loudest. And so when we try something, we just put, let's say, $100 behind something and we compare it to what we were doing. And if it works better, we put more money into it.
And that's for the clients, right?
Yeah. And so then internally, I mean, my ads managers don't really have a say in like that type of thing internally for the Hirsch marketing report. I mean, that was like actually an idea from one of my coaches who made me realize how much data I see and how much intelligence I have behind the scenes. So he challenged me to basically try and consolidate that and release it as a report, because it's very like, we release how much ad spend we manage every month, how much income we generated for our clients, what's not working, what's working. So internally, I make the decision and talk to my like executive team. I have a couple people who are involved in the operations, mostly on like feedback, obviously, but then how we're going to implement it. And so I am the decider of like what we implement in the business. And again, I look at data. So I actually did have where I was doing what we called Emily TV, and I was doing like a pretty edited TV episode every week. And it ended up being like $500 an episode. And I loved the idea of having this, and it was good. But what happened was I had a shift in the business where I used to actually also sell a course to virtual assistants, because I started as that. So I had my agency plus this course. And like 4 months ago, I talked about at the beginning, was like, no, I have to focus, you know, only on my agency. So I didn't shut down the course, but I stopped all marketing and like team efforts to it. And there's students still in there, but stopped that. And so the TV episode had actually been created like kind of more talking to that avatar. So after about I don't know, 2 months of running that, we decided to stop it. So like, again, we would look at the ROI, and I looked at the ROI myself of like, okay, $500 an episode, is that getting me a client every other episode? And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't speaking to the right person for where my focus kind of shifted to. And so we stopped releasing that. And I had to definitely like separate my ego there of like, well, I want, you know, Emily TV, and I have all these like unedited episodes that I filmed and I spend time doing. And that has happened before where I have to like remove that of like what I think that I want, but versus what's going to get us results and keep us all focused in the business to where we are going.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And so Emily TV and the marketing report are both content marketing, right?
Yeah.
And do you use, because I know that most people on my show, like content marketing is the way that they reach all their customers. They come inbound and then they nurture them in other ways. But I know that you are a paid marketing strategist and strategy company. So does content in that sense play like a different part in the funnel for you?
No, I mean, I definitely use content marketing. I'd say the biggest one I use is Facebook Lives. So I have a monthly like goal that I need to do about 8 a month right now. So we do that and it's organic, but we also definitely like put ad spend behind those so that it reaches new people. But content marketing is like, you need to have that piece in every business. Like, so not only me, but all my clients. And that's a big part of it is like, are you consistently building the know, like, and trust factor with your audience so that you can either retarget them or, you know, 2 months down the road, they're ready to work with you. So as an agency, that's a big thing, because I literally have people who fill out an intake form to work with us and they're like, oh, I've been following you for 2 years. And so like the consistency of me showing up online and then following me for that long and like now they're ready to work with us is just exactly why you have to always put, you know, some sort of effort into your social media and content.
So 8 Facebook Lives per month is a goal. That's 2 per week. How strategic are those content wise? Like, do you map out your month or is it just sort of haphazard as it comes out through the week?
I try to map it out. It's a lot easier
for me. You're a strategist, I would assume.
Yeah. Like right now I have a spreadsheet of a bunch of topics. So I spent actually a week and a half ago, like on my whiteboard, just like going through and just brain dumping a bunch of topics. And then from there I created titles. And so I try to map it out. Like, there are sometimes though that I will do a client strategy call and I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to go talk about this, like whatever it is. And so I'll just go do a Facebook Live on the fly on something like that, because I definitely base my content off of the experiences that I have with clients and in client strategy calls and what's working and what's not working for our clients. Like, that is my content. So I have both. And I think sometimes the like off the cuff ideas that you feel inspired to go and share end up being some of the best content. So I wouldn't like say you shouldn't do that. But it's also good for me to have it planned, because when I have to do 2 a week, I've noticed if I don't have it planned and I have to like think about it, then I don't do it as much. But if I have a spreadsheet that I can go pick from and be like, okay, I'll just do this topic today, like that's perfect. It works better for me. So I like to have a bank of planned episodes too for Facebook Live.
And then Facebook Live, it's organic, like you said, but you also put ad spend behind it.
Yeah.
Is it useful for somebody starting out to just do it organically, or it seems like people I know that have done that, they get so few views on it. Yeah. After about 2 weeks, they just stop.
Yeah. Facebook's algorithms are like organic reach is pretty much not there. So if you don't put ad spend behind it, you probably won't get very much reach. So I would absolutely put ad spend behind it. I mean, even if it's like $50 or $25, you're going to at least get some more viewers. And that allows you to reach like new people that you would never reach. Otherwise, you're going to keep doing Facebook Lives to your tiny circle of people. And only a very, very small percentage of even the people who like your page are going to see your Facebook Lives anyways.
Exactly. And then if you put money behind it, would you necessarily have to have, say, a call to action at the end of it?
Not always. I don't always. I will sometimes put a call to action in my text, regardless if I said it in the video. But I feel like a lot of times your content should just be value without strings attached. So there's a lot of different like opinions on this, but because you can take the data of people who are watching your videos and then retarget them to whatever you want to, like you don't necessarily have to have a call to action in every Facebook Live video. So I most of the time tell my clients, like, if it feels natural and you're talking about something and you've got this awesome opt-in or webinar or whatever to send people to in the Facebook Live, then send it, but don't force a call to action in every video if it doesn't go with the content that you want to go and teach, because even if the user can't see it, like you're going to later use that data for targeting and sending people to the next step in your funnel, that you don't have to have a call to action in every video.
Oh, meaning like the data of the people who showed up from this first
ad? Yeah. So like you can target, oh, I want to target, you know, my 25% video viewers on my Facebook Lives to my webinar or whatever it is.
That's cool. That's cool. So yeah. there's always other ways you can do it. You don't have to be focused on like making the return right at that point.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I don't know how deep into like Facebook ads you are at this point, but I know you recently, well, I don't know how recently, actually, I shouldn't say recently, but on your blog, you were one of your most recent blogs. I don't know how often you write on the site, but it was about lowering the cost of webinar registrations, which is something that so many people try. And again, I find, and I mean, you cover it, the fact that people try it for 3 days or 5 days or something, and just like, oh, it cost so much money and I didn't get any signups. And then they just give up. Is this something that somebody starting out should still focus on, or should they be focusing more on the content like the Facebook Lives?
I mean, both. Like, I think that you should definitely have content as a consistent part of your marketing always. So here's what I say, that you shouldn't start your webinar ads or Facebook ads unless you know. So you need to have obviously a very clear picture of who your ideal client is on a deep level, so that you can create content in Facebook Lives and a webinar that properly speaks to them. Then you should also know exactly how whatever you're offering is going to solve those people's problems. And you should be able to tell me that very clearly. And it sounds obvious, but you'll be surprised how many strategy calls I get on that people don't have that answer for me. And we have to dig deeper so that our marketing messages will find the right people. So you need to make sure you know that. And you need to have at least have an offer like that you're going to offer soon in your head, even if it's in 2 months from now, if you're going to focus on content, because otherwise there might end up being a disconnect in who you're attracting. So you need to know what your offer is going to be. And then honestly, you can do both. So you can run do a Facebook Live and do webinar opt-in ads at the same time and get results. And like they both kind of help each other out. So I don't think you have to. My advice is normally to start running ads earlier than people think they need to, because as long as you have like the funnel and you know your client and you know your offering, then you need to start so that you can start figuring out the type of ad copy that people are responding to, the images, the videos, the targeting, and like building the data in Facebook and starting to get your pixel and your ad account like seasoned to what is responding to your content. And that's going to take some time. So like if you're launching, you want to go through that where you're figuring out what audiences and things are responding before it's like a week out from your launch.
Right, right, right. I like that. So the three, so the clear picture and a deep understanding of who the client is and this deep understanding of their problems, and then an offer, mm-hmm. at least fairly reasonably in the future. This one where you said most people don't, like you get on calls for strategy and they don't have this sort of deep understanding of the problem. If you are on a call with a client like that, do you have like a simple way that you can explain this, or like an example that you give them?
Well, I just go through a process where I pull it out of them and I'm like, okay, tell me more. Because I think for a lot of people, they have it in their head, but it's hard for them to verbalize it. So it definitely is like, it's a natural skill that I have. Like I've tried to create templates because I want to obviously eventually train like a team member to be able to do this. Cause right now I'm the only one who does the initial strategy calls for clients, and long-term that I can't keep doing that. So I've tried and I don't have an exact template, but it's more like, let's think about the people that you like. For most of my clients coming through, they've already sold like products and they're not a brand new business owner. So I talk about, okay, tell me about the people who have bought your course or worked with you before. Like, what did they say to you when they came to you? Where were they at in their life? What were they struggling with? Or let's say they have like, they tell me, I just did a strategy call and she told me she has like a huge Facebook group. And so I was like, okay, what are they posting there? And what are they saying? And like, what are their problems? And then also sometimes like people are their ideal clients a lot of the times, actually. So I'm like, tell me about you when you were in that place, what you needed. And then they'll start saying things to me and then I start writing them down. And so they'll say like, I'm afraid of missing out on this, or like losing, you know, like whatever that is. And so I'll start kind of piecing that together and then going deeper into it if that is the case. And then we try and tie the offer. And it's usually like Most people, it's a story of like, well, I was that person and I knew I needed this. So then I created the solution to it. And now I solved the problem is like a lot of people's story. And so really getting a deep understanding of their, of that, whatever that looks like. And then using like any past data or past intelligence we have on who they've worked with is huge, because if you have, you know, past people that you've worked with, those are your goldmine of like, I need to go find more of them. So I need to learn about them.
Exactly. Exactly. And so if you don't have a strategist as smart as you sitting across the table from them, really, it's sort of asking like, what are the problems, or what are they saying, or what are they sort of complaining about, or what are their issues? And then following it up with like repeated whys. Why is that? Why is that? Why is that? And just really.
Yeah. I mean, I would encourage. I would encourage people, like if you were on your own and you weren't like on a strategy call to do it, I would tell you to like, just put yourself in their shoes. And it sounds cliche, the like what keeps them up at night, but like literally just think about being that person for a second and like put yourself in their place. And I do that with my own like our avatar. When I'm planning Facebook Live videos, I'm like, I'm in a zone, like thinking about, okay, like what are they struggling with? What do I need to talk about? And like on that deeper level. So spend like, and have the creative space to do that if you have never done that before.
I love it. I love it. And then start to create content around it. And then if it's on Facebook, put some ad spend behind it and start working that pixel.
Yeah.
There we go. All right, Emily, this has been an absolute blast. You've been at this business for, I think, just over 3 years now. You've started from being a VA to being a Facebook strategist yourself to growing and scaling a team super, super, super fast. Where, if we were to sit down a year from now, Emily, and you were like just super excited about what you've accomplished in the past year, what would that year have looked like?
So I'll obviously continue to grow my team and my client base. I also will definitely be doing more speaking. That's a big part of my goals and growing my own influence in my community, and just continuing to grow a business where there's separation between me and the day to day is like a constant, not struggle, but just like putting processes in and continuing to do that is something that I will be doing over the next year and have been doing over the last 6 months. But I think that will be a big game changer, and we, you know, will continue to be the best and the biggest digital marketing agency out there.
I love it. I love it. All right. We've talked about your business throughout the whole conversation, Emily, but there's people out there listening that you've intrigued. Could you specifically tell them who your business is for, what it'll do for them, and where they could find it?
Yeah. So we are a digital marketing agency. We work with primarily influencers, people selling digital products or services online. And we do done for you Facebook ads and sales funnel strategy and implementation. The best place to find me is Emily Hirsch, and that's HIRSH.com. And on there, you can obviously read about our services, but you can also sign up for that Hirsch Marketing Report. I give a lot of value to people out there in my community. So that's a good place to get that monthly report, which has a lot of intel in it.
Very cool. So if you're intrigued in the slightest, head over to EmilyHirsch.com and sign up for the report. It's right at the top of the page. And then Emily still has Emily TV on there for past episodes and the blog, a deeper sort of understanding of what we've spoke of today.
Yep.
Emily, once again, thank you so much for stopping by. Thank you so much for sharing so openly. I really, truly appreciate it. And I don't know, just keep doing what you're doing, Emily, because it's really awesome to watch.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Well, I enjoyed that. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did and as much as Emily did, partaking in that conversation. And as we were actually going through the conversation, like while we were having it, I should say, Emily and I was already like, my mind, I'm not sure why, because I think Emily was saying some things that were really sort of resonating with me. I was already in my head thinking about what that one thing would be. So it almost made it easier when I went back through the conversation. In some ways, it made it harder to choose, but I found it. I found the one thing that Emily said. Should we find it? All right, let's do it. Let's find the hack.
I always say that like marketing is just data. Like we need to remove the emotional connection to like people will like that or they won't like this. And obviously to an extent, we know our audience and we know what they like. And oftentimes we are our audience when we're marketing, but the data talks the loudest. And so when we try something, we just put, let's say $100 behind something and we compare it to what we were doing. And if it works better, we put more money into it.
And that's the hack. Emily, Emily, Emily. I love this. Marketing is just data. I think we could actually take this probably further in business. Business is just data, right? The way that she says we need to remove this emotional sort of connection to it, because that's where I think, well, that is, that's where we screw up. That's where we fail. And that's where we decide to continue to put time, money, and energy and resources into things that aren't working, that aren't ever going to work, perhaps, or that it's just like fighting an uphill battle. What's the point? Go somewhere where it's easier. But it's the data. And then I love, because we're in the context of like Facebook advertising, which is a massive thing, a massive channel for getting traffic, acquiring customers, no matter what business you're in. And I think if you're not an expert and a strategist like Emily, then you wonder, how do you get to that level to be able to spend $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, $10,000 a day in Facebook ads? You put $100 into it. You see if it works. If it works better, put more money into it. If it makes money and there's a return on your investment, put more money into it. It doesn't matter how you feel about the ad. It either works or it doesn't. Because marketing is just data. Emily, thank you so very, very much. All right. Well, that was a lot of fun. Thank you so much for taking time out of your beautiful summer day. Unless, I guess, you're in the other hemisphere, then it's winter for you. But anyways, thanks for taking the time. I really, truly do appreciate it. If you have your phone in your hand right now and you're listening to this, which I guess you are listening to this, but if you also have your phone in your hand, ratings, reviews, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, everywhere, they all help so very much. And they take just moments to give. It'd be cool, you know? And then when you're done that, head over to hacktheentrepreneur.com. Get onto the email list, and then we'll have Emily's show notes there too under the podcast. You can track it down. And everything we've talked about in here today, I'll link that up for you. So it's super easy for you to find. All right. It's been fun. I do thank you once again for stopping by. It's very cool of you. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.